Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. I'm really looking forward to a number of the topics that Jimmy and I are going to be talking about here. We're going to start out, we're going to talk a little bit about the educational system in the United States, and we're going to talk a little bit about the diverse nature of the numbers between mass shootings in outside of the United States as compared to what's going on in the United States. I am very, very enthralled with the subject of what the educational system is doing to, in a sense, further the concept of mass shootings. And I want to say a couple of things about some of our listener comments. Number one, CFS, you are an inspiration for this particular opening segment, and followed very closely by Out of the Box Jerry. And I also want to say that I am very concerned about education in the United States. I think I'm repeating myself here. We have more mass shootings. Mass shootings is being defined by the FBI as public shootings that involve the deaths of four or more people. We're getting too many of those here. I personally feel it's a direct result, not of guns, but a direct result of what's going on in the educational system. Jimmy, you mind if I relate what happened here in our town real quick? You gave me the information, but we had a very interesting incident, and then I'm going to ask Jim to talk about why he's living in South Carolina. Jimmy, we had an interesting situation in the last couple of days. They had to evacuate all of the Blaine schools, if I'm not mistaken, because of a bomb threat. The bomb threat followed upon the divulgence of the information that the Blaine School District decided to have a, quote, queer open mic night. We got a lot of conservatives up here, and they don't want to see their kids involved in things like queer open mic nights. Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about why you left a beautiful home, two beautiful homes, water views, et cetera, and moved back to South Carolina. And you and your family have direct experience with what's going on in the educational system here in Blaine. You're on.
Yeah, so, you know, my wife was on the school board, and right. She was on it for 4 years, and she struggled to keep the school open and to keep kids in school through the COVID crisis. And, of course, that didn't work because of the state regulation and the health department regulations. And the fear of the school board, other school board members, that they would somehow be held liable, and, of course, the intimidation tactics used by the government. But that goes hand in hand with other policies that were being put forward by the State Department of Education and the state superintendent, and of course the lobbyists for the school, you know, for the organizations that kind of run the teachers' unions. And basically it was a very leftist agenda, you know, pushing gender ideology, pushing white privilege, critical race theory type education programs into the schools, transgender and LGBT information for kindergartners and, you know, through, you know, all grades. And our point was, we were struggling. The reason why we left is because our children were very talented. They're all straight A students. Mm-hmm. In fact, my son was the valedictorian last year. My junior daughter was on her way to being the same thing. My youngest daughter has done a phenomenal job. And of course, you know, my older son is a PhD theoretical physicist, straight A's all his life. Right. And they're just very talented and hardworking kids that were being held back by the lowest common denominator. The programs were being designed by social emotional learning agendas, mm-hmm. meaning more about feelings and worrying about feelings than it was about either self-discipline or actually the effort it takes to work and succeed. And so they were actually being held back. I mean, when I say being held back, they weren't able to thrive. And I'll tell you, it was a challenge for them to go into South Carolina schools even though they were straight A's, to come here, you would think maybe the opposite, Washington with all the educated people and the high incomes there, that it would be better. But in fact, they've struggled when they came here to the school district they're in now to keep up. They're working, they're getting back up. But there's a big problem with the types of influences that are pushing agendas in our school children, and it's really dividing us rather than unifying us. And I think that that actually has a direct relation to the hatred that you're seeing and the violence and the frustration with youth around the country.
You know, I think that I would use the word, instead of using the word hatred, I would use the word frustration. I got to tell you, I am starting to feel incredibly frustrated with what's going on. When you have a town like Blaine, Washington, which is a little peanut, really, in terms of population, and which has relatively, part of Blaine has relatively high demographics in terms of income, in terms of what people do for work, etc., intelligence, etc., etc., and part of Blaine is just the opposite. And that's fine. God love the people who are working like hell to work their way out of that particular situation, because many of them are. The Blaine school system has a large number of kids who are actually living in cars with their parents. And again, as I said, God love them. They are some of the most squared away people who I have ever seen in my life. And I have met many of those kids. Having said that, I am getting very, very tired of the high degree of woke in a little town like Blaine, Washington. Jim, why don't you continue on with this trend, if you would, just for about a minute and a half, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, so, I think these problems, it's reflected in society right now. And, of course, people... the fairness idea that everything has got to be fair and equal, and that you've got to somehow, and people that have an advantage somehow have to suffer and be brought down. That's a very Marxist ideology. And if not directly, that's what happens when you start getting a system where everything has to be equally distributed, because you're actually pulling high performers down.
Yep.
And unfortunately, what we have is a lot of pressure, economic, media, elitist pressure. And a lot of this is from left ideologies with single, retired leftists that come up into our area. We're on the West Coast, that have very few children, but then they've got these ideologies that actually drive them. And I think that's what's pushing these agendas. What could be on paper good, but in reality is actually very divisive, and it's separating people. And I think that's where we have to change.
We are separating people to the point right now where it's getting to be actually dangerous. And I want to get back to the comments. CFS, you are a major contributor, a major reason for the high quality of this particular program. Out of the box, you're right there with him. Eddie, you're right there with him. And I want to say another guy who I basically started to spam some of his comments. Larry, you actually have some very interesting, thought-provoking comments about the medical system in the United States. I apologize for spamming some of your comments. This is a free country. People can say whatever they want. My personal apology to you, sir, your comments about the medical system, even though I disagree with them, because my life has been saved by kind of a country medical system. And I want to say that I appreciate your comments. Please do accept my apology. We're going to be back. Jimmy and I are going to be back here. We're going to be covering topics like Davos, which is very, very interesting. Boy, let's talk about nationalism versus globalism. And we're going to be talking about some of the primaries. Jimmy, thank you so much for helping me out. Thank you so much, even more importantly, for helping the listeners out. You guys, stick around. We've got a great show planned for you. We've got some interesting topics. We'll be back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. I'm going to talk a little bit about climate change right now with Dr. Birnbaum. not necessarily the pros and cons, but we're going to talk about the psychological effect of climate change. Frida, you're on.
Thank you. That's true. It's really not about the climate change as much as how people are relating to the climate change and the global warming effect. So we're looking at the reality here that research has shown that there are higher rates of depression and post-traumatic stress among survivors who experience tornado-related damage. And air pollutants is associated with increased severity of psychiatric symptoms among male veterans, this research has shown. So it is having an effect, whether it's true or not, whether we should be worried about it or not, is not really the point of this discussion. What's going on really is that there's a higher frequency of hospitalization, believe it or not, and suicide attempts with global warming, and it's been contributing to these mental health problems. There's an association with urban crime violence and extreme heat. So weather, temperature, does affect the way people react and behave in their lives as well. And also, a study found that 8% increase in anxiety and mood disorder and acts of self-harm have been found. Now, I'm not saying that this is a total cause. Sometimes underlying situations precipitate something that needed to be looked at. So this could be a factor with mental illness as well. But climate has had an effect on people that has been associated with adverse experiences in childhood as well, mainly because our social behavior has changed with this type of risk factor, that the climate change is something that is an emotional instability for people who are worried. And the problem is, the sad thing is, are they really worried about a reality? Is this something that they should be concentrating on as far as a fact? Is this climate warming phenomenon really taking away from our ability to function in this world? And our climate change, is that going to really make that huge a difference? I don't think so. I really feel that this report is something that has more to do with people's mild stresses, mental illnesses, coping behavior, and increased alcohol use. And, you know, we're going through a lot of trauma in our country. So climate change is really not the main factor right now. But the after effects of what is going on with people and how they're associating stressors in their lives are really real issues that we need to look at, because children, actually, they found that have had delayed developmental issues because they couldn't go to school because of the virus, have had cognitive behavioral problems, developmental problems. So this is a whole conglomerate of events that's all been mixed up together as climate change and warming temperatures have changed as well. But we have to look at, you know, our food, our the way we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe. And we have to look at also the fact that inflation has been progressing and that there are other factors that we are concerned about. What about unemployment? What about having the right resources to function in our world in a healthy manner? So people are really not really very passionate about climate change in general.
No, if I just interrupt you for a second, some people are incredibly passionate about climate change, believe it or not.
Yes, I know. It's believe it or not is the real question. And I suspect a lot of it is politically oriented, that they're sold this bill of goods that, oh, this is what we need to do that the Republicans haven't been really looking at too closely. So it's a political issue. The virus has been a political issue as well. And really the fear factor is not a political issue, because it's really actually happening to people. They're processing this and it's affecting their lives. So we have to really look at what is really a real concern and what is not. Anxiety, worry, nervousness, you know, we are looking at changes in our lifestyle and how we look at the planet. Well, in reality, our lifestyles have been pretty good until we went into this new political phase in our life and the things that have been going downhill since then. But we are doing many things that we've spoken about, walking, biking, electric cars. We're eating more vegetables, less dairy and meat. So a lot of these things that we're concerned about are actually changing, and we are making a difference. And the government really, if they're concerned, has to take steps to it. But I think the political arena is using this, is milking this for their own benefit, to give their people, the citizens, scare tactics unnecessarily. Yeah. And we have to look and see that this is something that we have to be able to be comfortable with, the reality of what is really happening. So, you know, 71% Americans think that global warming will harm our future. How sad is that, to have to live with that?
I don't really know, because I don't know. From everything I've seen, I've got some interesting thoughts about that. Pardon me. Having said that, Frieda, I'd like to ask you a personal question. And the personal question, I know the answer to, but I would like our listeners to basically be very cognizant of where you're coming from politically. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we used to talk a lot about your support for Donald Trump, for example. So I have to believe that you are probably more conservative than liberal. Am I correct in that?
100%. We would not be in this mess if we had a strong leader like yeah. Donald Trump. As I said before, is it a coincidence that we have this weak leader and Putin stepped in and all the threats are being, instead of being on the counterattack, we become defensive? What is that for a country that is supposed to have leadership qualities? Aren't we the ones that have to set the rules and set the standards and what's right and wrong? Well, that's not happening anymore. We have a dictator here who's setting rules for us, and our politician, our president, is stepping back.
Yeah.
And it's just a disgrace. What, it's a disgrace to what America stands for.
Not only is it a disgrace, but I think it's causing an awful, awful lot of frustration and various neuroses about that. Frieda, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you guys enjoy the top of the hour news. As I say every week, I hope the news that is carried by your stations in your local areas are better than some of the news that I'm getting out here. Anyway, having said that, what I would like to do at this point in time, Jimmy, is I'd like to get over to Davos. That's a big meeting. In my opinion, it is really, on the one hand, nationalistic, and on the other hand, very, very globalistic. I'd like to get your views on that, and I'd like to talk about Klaus. Obviously, he's beginning to be painted as more and more of a dangerous person. I read a bit of his biography yesterday, and I have to agree with some of the listeners who feel that way. How do you feel about this guy? Let's start out with that, Jimmy.
Well, I think he's an elitist. He yeah. started this program back in about approximately 20 years ago, I think, where they brought together the elite, financial, very powerful and influential people and leadership politicians to get together to talk about how they could make the world a better place. I think initially people took it as, well, you know, you get the elite together, that happens, and maybe they'll come up with good ideas.
Yeah.
But what Klaus Schwab has done is actually turn this into basically a second shadow government for the world government, where they bring together leaders and then they institute, they discuss and talk, and then they have these little programs and little groups, breakout sessions, and they come up with ideas how to approach problems in the way they see fit, not in the way a potential, an individual national country or even the voters in that country think should things should be done.
Yeah.
And so what I see with Klaus Schwab is a guy that's gotten way too much power, that has too much influence, and has been shaping events globally in a way that he thinks is best, and the people that he co-opts to think is best. But in the end, a lot of people are beginning to understand that this is a very dangerous exo-government, world-type government developing.
Well, it really seems to be that way. I want to take off on your statement a little bit more, though, and that is a world government developing. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so, you know, there's many. So they have what they call the Global Leadership Fellows for the World Economic Forum. And this is basically a program where they bring in young, potential, up-and-coming politicians. Let me give you a good example. Justin Trudeau is a member of that program. And then, of course, as he worked his way up and became Prime Minister of Canada, he was assisted by many powerful people financially and politically that were involved with the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Now, so he's in place in there. And the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and these groups actually brag about how many people inside the bureaucracies of many governments they have installed over the years. And I think that is an incredibly telling statement that they're proud to be able to kind of use their philosophy and ideologies of government and how things should be managed and circumvent or at least influence outcomes in other nations and democracies and non-democracies. And I think that's probably mostly in democracies, because non-democracies don't care. The Chinese, the Russians, they could care less, even though they participate.
And
so
look,
yeah,
and look who's getting ahead in the world, way ahead of some of the freer countries. It's China and Russia.
Yeah, well, I won't say Russia's getting ahead, but definitely China is moving towards the highest demographics, the highest economic power, the biggest military power, and the biggest communications influencer with much diplomatic power and financial influence over many, many places. And you put that together, that looks like a change in the future of mankind, where an authoritarian leadership has that much influence and power over the world.
Mm-hmm. Agree 1,000% over that one. It's hard to say who's going to win in the end if you want to use the terrible world called win. Let me ask you a question about Justin Trudeau. How much of his involvement do you think in Davos led to what he did to the truckers in Eastern Canada?
Well, that's exactly the example I'm talking about, where he neglected fundamental principles in the Canadian Charter that protected individual rights, because he felt that he knew better and he had to silence opposition. And he did that through through law enforcement, through co-opting the media, numerous media outlets. And he also used it financial influence to shut down people's accounts that were supporting the truckers, who had a legitimate argument of opening back up the economy and getting them back to work. And I think, you know, Justin Trudeau made very clear comments saying that, in fact, he appreciated and respected the Chinese because they could do that type of thing without having to face the consequences of either court or public opinion. And I think that's an incredible example of authoritarian elitist ideology taking over democracy, something that people need to realize is happening around the world. And the World Economic Forum and Davos is the center of this type of activity.
Yep. Give me an opinion on that, would you? Just a personal opinion real quick.
Well, I think, you know, whenever you have a small group of people that think they know better, they begin to lose touch with the average people on the ground. But with the more power they have, the more influence, the media control, and many of these global corporate companies that influence both technology and the flow of information are members and participate in programs through the WEF, World Economic Forum, and are participating in Davos. And they're doing that because they want more power and more financial gain out of it. And so for them, this is a great opportunity to consolidate and gain power. And it really pushes out small business, it pushes out the voter, and it makes most people irrelevant. You become the slaves of these big tech corporate giants. And of course, they own the media outlets, which shape and influence people's opinions to hide and cover up what they're doing, when in the end, what they're doing is actually just gaining more power and taking away individual choice and rights. You're seeing it with the silencing of free speech. You're seeing it with the downgrading of Twitter feed negative comments that would go against either an ideological leftist view or the power there. And you're seeing it with the media outlets actually never addressing the potential for this type of a group to take power. And they're slowly doing it over a long period of time. And they have a lot of money and influence and ability to do it.
Got an interesting question for you, Jimmy. You know, it looks like right now in the United States anyway, it looks like Elon Musk is switching parties. It looks like he's going into being a very moderate, not, take out the word very, it looks like he's going to turn into a moderate Republican. There is even some conjecture about perhaps Jeff Bezos turning into a moderate Republican, although I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think his company is just going to get too rich and too famous under the philosophy of, let's say, of the progressive regime, for lack of better terms. But comment on the fact that a guy like Elon Musk, I mean, you got to admit, the guy is a genius. He has done things in his lifetime that put national governments to shame. And by that, I mean he's put the automotive industry to shame. He's put, I would have to say, the space industry to shame with what he is doing. How important a factor, Jimmy, do you think that he is going to be? We've only, unfortunately, got about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, so Elon Musk, he said, I'm going to vote Republican for the first time in my life, and he's going to do it. There's a number of people. Joe Rogan's getting a lot, seeing red. You know, they're starting to realize what's happening with silencing other people's voices. And that's where the big fight is, because they understand you silence people's voices, you basically change the dialogue and you control the outcomes. And that's what I think Elon Musk is doing, fighting against that. And thank God there are people willing to do that.
Well, there you go. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. I'm going to wrap up the show with KER Politics. You know, I just can't help to do this. I know some people might think it's trite, but I think it's incredibly important. Let's talk about what a fool this guy running for governor in Texas, Beto O'Rourke, has really turned out to be.
Yeah, so, okay, in the very, very sad, violent shooting by this crazy kid in Texas, in Uvalde, Texas, that which is just a horrible, horrible tragedy for, and I of course feel for all the families and everything. But Beto O'Rourke had been running; he's been running for governor, and Beto O'Rourke had said publicly in his on the stage in the primaries in his run for president. And this is after his failed Senate run against Ted Cruz back a few years ago. But in the 2020 primaries, he said that, hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15s away. But he realized in Texas that's not such a good policy as he's running for governor. So during the campaign, he completely changed and said, oh, I'm not taking your guns away. I'm not taking your guns away. Of course, this unfortunate and very terrible mass shooting happens. This kid kills his grandmother, goes into a school, takes law enforcement a long time to get him, and it's sad, sad, sad circumstances. Beto O'Rourke goes storming into a press conference where the governor of Texas is speaking to talk about the tragedy and makes basically a fool of himself, in my view. But then it scrubs his campaign web pages of information on allowing, Second Amendment. So basically, he's flip-flopped multiple times here for political advantages. I think it's a very desperate move. He won the primary here for the governor's race for the Democrats. There's going to be a lot of money thrown at him, very much like the Senate campaign and some of the in the presidential campaign. But like Stacey Abrams of Georgia, all he's done is lost. But,
yeah.
And I just think, that type of flip-flop and that, he's definitely going to alienate people. The tragedy here is actually continuing to divide people into two camps, those that support the Second Amendment and those that don't. And here's the reality. The Second Amendment is in the Constitution. You're not going to change it anytime soon without absolutely authoritarian control to do so, which is what apparently many of the Democratic Party would like to see right now, because they're going to use this to their political advantage,
sure,
in spite of the fact that this kid broke every law in the book, and it wasn't about the guns. It was about the, what he was willing to do and the just absolutely sad circumstances of both his personality, what he was going through, what was happening in the education system, like we talked earlier, and frustration, and just, a complete sad event. And the politicians using this, I think, are going to find that they're doing it too early before the November elections. And they're going to try to ride this along with the Roe v. Wade issues,
right,
as, again, a distraction for the failed policies of the border, the failed policies of the economy, failed foreign policy that this administration and this Democratic Party has brought upon America.
I don't disagree. You want to get over into the primaries now?
Well, we had some interesting, things that happened in the primaries. There were some, I think they still haven't come to a final conclusion. I'm doing a recount. I think it'll be due next week for the Pennsylvania primary with Oz. He was in the lead by a very small number of votes. I think less than 1,000, and we'll see what happens with that. And of course, that was a Trump supported position that a lot of, conservatives were like not happy with Trump supporting him, but they were looking, I think the Trump team, unfortunately or fortunately, was looking at it like, hey, we want someone that can win in the general election.
Right.
And the Kathy Barnett, the young black woman who had a very, very intriguing story they pushed out, and the other candidate who's now fighting and with Oz for the
mm-hmm.
final.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to, it's kind of an ugly circumstance.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens after that. That's one case. McCormick is the guy that is actually, they're going into the recount between Oz and McCormick. And I think 902 votes was the separation. So
wow, that's pretty close.
Yeah. So you see a little bit of confusion there, but it looks like the Trump pick will come out there. Now, Georgia's another case where Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, and Raffensperger, the secretary of state, mm-hmm. both ran, basically never Trumpers. They ran. Purdue was the guy, that former senator for Georgia, that lost in his reelection campaign in this last 2020 election by a very narrow margin because the people were just frustrated and Republicans didn't come out and vote. Trump supported Purdue, and Kemp stomped on Purdue. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, but basically that throws a very different wrench into Georgia. And Georgia is one of those places that has been very problematic in the vote count in Fulton County and, of course, in other counties in the 2020 election. And both Raffensperger and Kemp, in my view, don't look very good because there's more and more evidence that's coming out that they had problems and they ignored them. And the latest issue is actually when they did the recount in December to declare you know, by just a very, you know, very small number of votes out of millions that Biden had won, it looks like there's some very significant problems with that recount effort as well, as well as the mail-in ballots and then the potential for other corruption.
Well, we've talked that one into the ground. We haven't talked it into the ground because the issue isn't resolved yet, but I agree.
Yeah, well, and it's the most important issue in the nation.
You don't have valid elections. Exactly.
Yeah, so if you don't have free and fair, open, transparent elections, you don't have a democracy. You don't have a country, and
exactly.
That's the problem.
Let me ask your opinion about something. I'm going to throw kind of a curveball at you here. In terms of the Republicans, the conservatives, we got two guys who I think are pretty important, and I'm taking Trump out of it right now just because that's a real wild card. You got Ted Cruz on the one hand. You got Ron DeSantis on the other hand. Give us a quick opinion on each one of those, will you?
So Ted Cruz has stood out very strongly now as a loyal, you know, he and Trump had a lot of falling out in the primaries. Of course, Trump made some very nasty comments about Ted Cruz and his wife. So that wasn't very good, but
yeah.
they've mended fences because Ted Cruz very much understands the Constitution, what it's about. So, but he's not posturing. It doesn't look like he's running around trying to gain the requirements, the financial funding, and the notoriety to run as for a presidential campaign. Because I think he knows that Trump will probably be in it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the same thing. So I think he'd be a very strong candidate. He's a very strong constitutional guy. People are beginning to see him beyond, you know, something else. And I think he's probably thinking long term here.
Yeah.
I think Ron DeSantis is the same thing. I think they're both, they have the fundamental beliefs that Trump does. And remember, this is not a... People try to paint this as a Trump issue. It's not a Trump issue. Americans responded in the 2016 election because of the frustration over what had been going on in the Obama administration. And of course, you know, the pushback and the anger that potentially got Biden 81 million votes, very questionable, is really about the direction of the nation and who represents that best. Ron DeSantis has done phenomenal things in Florida. But he also is looking, I think he's loyal to the fundamental ideologies of keeping America first and doing the right thing for the people. And a conservative view, I think he's focused on Florida right now. And I think he's got to win this reelection. And then I think, again, he would be a phenomenal candidate, but he'd be a phenomenal vice presidential candidate 2024. And that's where I think things are headed.
I think both those guys, both DeSantis and Cruz, I think you're looking. I think really, I've pretty much given up on Trump not being in there. I think Trump is going to be there, and I think the strength of the party is going to lie into the, quite frankly, the vice presidential candidate. Having said that, I'm looking forward to this upcoming election. I don't want to say it could be the last one that I'll ever see because I don't think that way, but I think it's going to be an absolute spellbinder on the one hand. I think it's going to be truly interesting, and I think, quite frankly, it's going to represent, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the future of our country.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.